On this first day of the new year, we want to look back at one of the biggest stories of 2014, race relations in America. We first spoke with Reverend Charles Williams II of the historic King Solomon Baptist Church in Detroit back in 2013. That was after a young African-American woman was shot and killed outside the home of a white man near Detroit. Renisha McBride had crashed her car in the early morning hours and knocked on the door of Theodore Wafer. Wafer said he thought somebody was trying to break into his house. He shot McBride through the screen door and killed her. He was sentenced to 17 years in prison. Reverend Williams spoke to us back then about the racial tensions that resulted in his community. A lot's happened, though, since then, with the police killings of African Americans in Ferguson, Missouri, Staten Island, and Cleveland. So we wanted to talk to him again. Reverend Williams compares the responses to these events, from legislative action to investigations to protests, to the activism of the civil rights movement of the 1960s and the days when the African-American seamstress Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on the bus to a white man.
You know, Rosa Parks sitting on the bus was about desegregation, and certainly it was about changing the laws, but it also changed the character of the country. We got the opportunity to see folks like Bull Connor put dogs in water hoses on people as they protested and demonstrated. We see, even now, we see tear gas, we see automatic weapons, we see police dressed up in bully clothing. I mean, I think to some degree, it's not necessarily the laws that were actually changed. It's the environment that's being changed and that's being challenged. And I think that in itself helps grow the country. I don't think that it necessarily takes us backwards. I think it takes us forward. However, I am not one who believes that these protests or demonstration will happen in a moment. I think this moment will be changed into a movement.
When the movement happens in a violent way, is it fair to ask whether the movement and race relations are evolving or devolving?
You know, I think that they are evolving. Most African Americans will see that things have gotten better. But, you know, years and years and years of work to be respected as a human being or a man in the U.S. have taken place. I mean, we can go back to slavery, and then we can go back to post-slavery, where things got better for African Americans. Then we can go back to the early 20s, where things got inched along a little bit better for African Americans. I think the same thing happened during the Civil Rights Movement. With the 64 Civil Rights Act and 65 Voting Rights Act, things got a little bit better. And then it included also those who had disabilities. Then it included more of those who from different backgrounds, LGBT backgrounds. And then now it's coming back around even for more African Americans. I think every round goes higher and higher. We're getting better. But that does not mean that movement and the continued press for justice and the continued press for respect must be dismissed. I think that has to continue. I am of the belief and the background that it should happen in a way that's nonviolent, in the tradition of Dr. Martin Luther King and certainly Mahatma Gandhi, who taught Dr. King. I'm in the way that we must continue to shine that light. We must continue to do that work on the ground. I think one of the things that most of all always have impressed me about President Obama is that he's always been very consistent about the fact that he needs that movement. He needs movement on the ground. And one of the things that we are certainly thankful for is that in 2014, we did have a president that addressed police brutality. We're really happy about where we come from, but we've got to continue to press harder to get more results in terms of where we're going.
Of course, you know that when certain leaders speak out against police brutality, that is believed to, in some cases, inflame the anger among those who believe that police brutality has existed for too long and should stop, and that sometimes results in violence against police.
Well, it requires us to be truthful with ourselves. Silence is consent, and I'm very, very happy that leaders, entertainers, political leadership, clergy leadership, civil rights leadership, all types of leadership, white leadership, black leadership, are really standing up and stepping out and really speaking up and saying that there needs to be independent investigations, and the investigation shouldn't take forever by way of the federal government when these cases hit. There needs to be body cameras. There needs to be policy in place where the police cannot just get away with shooting people.
Well, let me ask you this. How does a leader properly speak about police violence and police brutality, especially white-on-black violence, and not inflame tensions more and create more violence against police?
Well, there are many ways to do it, and certainly we work, as I said earlier, in a way where we speak out in the tradition of Dr. King and Mahatma Gandhi in nonviolent direct action in a nonviolent movement. But we appreciate even the athletes who wear T-shirts and say, I can't breathe, or we appreciate the entertainers who accept awards and have words to say. I mean, that's movement. And I think if we are consistent and we sustain a nonviolent direct action freedom of speech movement that continues to highlight this, we'll get eventually movement from Congress. We'll get movement from our legislators locally in states across America. And one thing that we do realize is that it's a really a steady uphill climb. Some of the young people who are out there protesting now, some of the mistakes that they make, you know, believe that, you know, we went out and we protested, or I wrote a blog, or I shared a Facebook status, or I clicked like, or I tweeted, and where's the justice? And, you know, it doesn't happen like that. It's a protracted struggle that does not stop. And as long as we are here and we are forced to deal with our past, I think we're going to continue trying to move a movement forward.
You know, a lot of us make resolutions on New Year's. You're going to be preaching on Sunday, and I wonder, I guess some of your resolutions may come out in your sermon. What are you going to preach about?
Well, you know, I think as we move forward, the resolutions are always, you know, very challenging. You know, I'm thinking of some of the more practical points, like independent investigations, like body cameras.
Are you going to preach about that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, very important to be relevant to the times of what's going on. I think people understanding inside of our congregations that we must be examples, or the same example that was set by Christ, who spoke out against the injustice of the times. We must do the same thing. I mean, I think those are some of the resolutions that we have. Mm-hmm. Outside of the fact that I need to lose about 50 pounds. And so I'm going to start working out on January 1st with everybody else. And hopefully by March or April, I'm still working out.
You know, we'll get back to you at the end of the year and see how you're doing, Reverend. We're going to hold you to that one.
All right.
Thank you. Reverend Charles Williams II is a pastor of Historic King Solomon Baptist Church and president of the National Action Network of Michigan, speaking to us from Royal Oak, Michigan. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.